We are just under 2 months away from the April 15th deadline for filing your income tax returns for the past fiscal year. And if you're like most of your peers, you probably haven't yet started to fill in the boxes to indicate your earnings, allowances, and deductions.
Tax codes and forms have the reputation for being complicated. And for some this year, they're certainly living up to that reputation. Among other areas, elements of the Affordable Care Act affecting small business are now in effect, and that's causing many small business people to have questions.
Dale Hamernick is one of the people who fields those questions. He's a tax and business consultant in West Allis, and he joins us now to talk about some of the issues surrounding the Affordable Care Act and another issue that's been attracting attention, tax identity fraud. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So this is tax season, obviously, and the big question mark for some time now has been the impact of the Affordable Care Act in a number of ways. What are the big issues that when you talk to a client, especially one in, say, the small business area, what are the big question marks that they typically have now about how the Affordable Care Act affects their bottom line as far as taxes go?
Well, currently, because the Affordable Health Care Act has been an ongoing transition, it has been changed, modified. There's still some confusion as far as where does a small business lay in the parameters of regulations and what do they need to know, what do they need to do, by when and how. So a lot of it's just a matter of keeping them informed as far as what class are they. And there's small employers, 50 or less employees. There's large employees, 50 to 100, or 100 and over. So we have to figure out what class they need to be in. If they're under the 50 or less, they're a small employer, which means they're not mandated by the ACA. They don't have to provide health insurance for their employees, but they are responsible for disclosing to their employees their responsibilities of having health insurance coverage.
And there are some benefits if they take if they do provide insurance through the marketplace. Is that correct?
Correct. There's a special marketplace for small businesses, which is the SHOP program, the Small Business Health Option Program, which puts them in a marketplace, gives them competitive rates as if they were a large company. If you have 25 or fewer employees, there are some tax credits if you do provide and you do meet the requirements.
And just to keep things straight, the issues, you know, there are probably a couple of things at stake now. One is what sort of credits do they qualify for as they're, you know, filing taxes for the current fiscal year? And then also what should they put in place so that the next time taxes come around, they might be in a better position?
Correct. If you're mandated to be in the program or offer health insurance, obviously there's penalties for not having. But most of the large companies, the 50 or more, were given an extension to January 1st of 2016. But if I'm a small employer, I need to disclose to my employees their responsibility of getting the insurance. Otherwise, there is penalties being enforced on 2014's tax returns.
And talk a little bit about those penalties.
Penalty says if you don't have proper minimal coverage, which they're classifying as the bronze plan, which is a 60-40 split, 60% insurance covered, 40% out of pocket. If there's lapse or no coverage, there is penalties calculated, either 1% of your income up to $95 per person in your household too. So that needs to be calculated on your tax return that you'll be preparing shortly here.
I spoke with someone from the Small Business Administration actually last week on this show, and one of the interesting statistics that came up is the vast majority, I think something like three quarters of the small businesses in Wisconsin are actually sole proprietor. How do these issues apply if your small business is essentially just you?
If it's just me, you have to have, there again, like anybody else, every taxpayer has to have health insurance, regardless if you have a job, don't have a job. But if you're self-employed, you have to have the insurance, either through the marketplace or another avenue as far as insurability. If not, there again, the same procedures. On your tax return, there's questions. Do you have health insurance? If not, here's the penalty. If you did have health insurance through the marketplace, there's some premium tax credits that could be available to help make the premium a little bit easier as far as affordable.
What are the other kinds of issues that have come up? Are there things about, say, flexible spending accounts that people should know about?
The progression with the ACA has been an ongoing changes, and some of the changes says they did reduce the flex spending accounts to $2,500 from their previous hires. So they're trying to groom people into the marketplace so everybody has some consistency. So the flex plan has been modified.
Well, so You are a tax consultant. You do this work for clients. How much of a learning curve is there for you as you know you try to understand all of the stuff that your clients are working with?
It's an ongoing process. Again, when this all first came out with the hopes, and then we didn't know for sure was it going to get passed. If it got passed, then it got passed, and then it got modified. Then there's some extensions. So there's been a lot of ongoing continuing ed that we have to stay abreast as far as what do we need to do, because the government has put the IRS in charge of the compliance side, which is our tax preparation issue. Now we have to ask the compliance issues. Do you have health insurance? If so, are you covered? Were you covered for all 12 months? So there's a lot more questions or follow-up that we have to do as a tax preparer.
Is it especially complex for you as a tax preparer?
We have to ask all these extra questions. And also if they are eligible for the tax credits, we have to calculate the credit. If they are subject to the penalties, there's also exemptions. There's 11 exemptions to get out of the penalty. One of it's unaffordable. Two, if you're in certain groups, be it tribal, be it religious groups, there's 11 exemptions. Hardship is one big one. And within hardship, there's 14 other exemptions that could qualify you for the hardship exemption.
So are you still, when you're working with clients, are you still seeing things for the first time? You know, I've never had this situation come up before.
Yes. Well, this is a learning curve for all of us. So we basically need, every time we see a case, we have to examine to see, are we following procedures? People are starting to come with their 1095C forms. Those are ones that the marketplace is issuing that said that they had insurance, how much they paid insurance. So these are all transaction forms that we need to make sure that we see or ask those questions that they, if they have one coming.
You're one of the people that others turn to when they have questions. Who does Dale Hamernick turn to with questions?
Ongoing research, ongoing seminars. We have to do continuing ed as far as being an EA. I have to have 72 hours worth of continuing ed every 3 years. So it means it's a constant upkeep, especially with the changes in the mandates. Any professional, you have to be professional and do your due diligence as far as understanding your craft.
How much sleep do you get this time of year?
Enough.
I want to turn to another area that's getting a lot of attention. We've heard quite a bit about data security breaches at banks and major retailers, but now we're starting to hear about this phenomenon of tax ID fraud more commonly. How big a deal is this?
Extremely large, and it's getting larger and has been getting larger to the point where last year, they said the first 6 months of 2013, 1.6 million taxpayers had their tax identity theft taken.
1.6 million.
And that's just 6 months, and that's 2013. So there again, every time there's a weakness, there's an opportunity, and we have people that want to take opportunity of people's situations. And the IRS has paid close to $3 to $4 billion in fraudulent tax refunds over the last each year, actually.
Where is the weakness? How is this taking place?
The electronically filed tax returns was a new technology that created the ease of filing tax returns, also created the opportunities for thieves to enter the system. So there again, with the breach of security and the e-file system being one that says right now, currently, as long as you have a name and a social security number that matches the database, you can get entered into the e-file system and create a bogus tax return and get a refund.
And this is regardless of whether that particular Social Security number or tax ID number is really owed a refund.
Correct. There again, the e-file system currently says as soon as the return gets accepted, the refund is issued without the checks and balances of the return being a valid return. So that's somewhat what the IRS is starting to backtrack. They expedited the refund process, and now they're trying to slow it down so they can validate and verify returns before they issue the refunds.
This is, I assume, an issue whether you prepare your own taxes or have someone do them for you. If somebody jumps in ahead of you, it doesn't really matter who's filed the
first return in. It locks out the e-file system. So if someone's filed with your Social Security number, you will get rejected. You can't use the e-file system, which means now you got to do the old-fashioned way, paper mail it, wait 4 to 6 weeks and find out that if someone else had filed for you, and now you're going to go into the fraud department, which from what we're hearing, takes close to 6 months for them to resolve the issue and get you your refund back.
So you are still entitled to that refund even if a fraudulent return has been entered.
That's correct, yeah. Your return will be processed as if it is the valid return, and after you've been processed, your refund will be issued. And then for the following year, you'll be given a special ID number. It's called a PIN number that says now next year the IRS knows which return is actually your return.
Is that something you can do preemptively? Can you, if you typically e-file, can you request to have a PIN number?
Currently, no. As I said, they're only issuing them for people that have been affected by the tax identity, the fraud issue.
So if there isn't that additional layer of security, typically, what are the best methods that you suggest to keep this from happening?
Try to file as early as possible. There again, don't rush the issue because sometimes information isn't currently available. But you try to get in as soon as possible so you do have that first right into the system. There again, if you don't get the first right, you just have a little bit longer drawn-out process. But I said your return will be filed properly, timely, and your refund will come, but it's going to be a little bit more of a long, drawn-out process.
And are there ramifications for taxpayers in terms of the likelihood of an audit down the road if a fraudulent return has been filed on your taxpayer ID number?
No, because usually when you get in the fraud department, you're going to do some follow-up questions. And usually we, as tax professionals, we know a client has it. There's an affidavit that needs to be filled out to prove that this is indeed your tax return. So an audit is not an issue. The IRS is aware that there's a lot of fraud going on there, and they can tell by after see both returns which one's the real one.
If only an identity thief would file a return and have to pay
Yeah, no, that's not the case. No, they're in it for the money, and so the average claim is usually around $2,000 to $3,000, and they have a direct deposit in an account, so they're in and out as quick as possible.
Well, and does this have ramifications in terms of ID theft down the road?
It has become more and more prevalent. The IRS needs to change some of their processes. Once they close the loopholes, it should start reducing the amount of theft in the tax side of it. There again, tax identity theft is just a part of it. It's not the true identity theft where people take over your true identity. It's just a matter of they're filing tax returns with some of your information.
So if there's any blessing in this, it's not that they're truly doing identity theft. They're just making off with the taxpayers' money.
Right. Yeah. So they can file numerous claims for $2,000 to $3,000 in a couple of months. It's a pretty good gig, I guess, for them. That's why it's growing, because people are hearing about it and they know it's easy enough to do.
Well, Dale Hamernick, thank you so much for sharing your perspective on this for us.
Thank you for having me.
Dale Hamernick is a tax and business consultant whose firm, Hamernick & Associates, is based in West Allis.
Coming up next, have you ever wanted to know how to build a timber frame house or maybe even make your own yarn? You can learn at the Driftless Folk School, and we'll learn more when Lake Effect returns on WUWM.